Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today we're going to talk about pop culture and some of the fire ideas that we extracted from movies and some TV shows and that sort of thing. I have a couple special guests. Both of them are equally special. We have Pete, Mr. Money Mustache, and we have Rusty, frequent guest. So, Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm splendid, as I always am when I get to be on Mile High Five.
Beautiful. And how about you, Rusty?
I'm doing well. And I'm cracking up because last time Doug and I recorded, he introduced Carl as a special guest. And I was like, what am I? So I appreciate the special guest recognition.
It's great to have you both in the studio. And, you know, I've been recording a lot of like remote episodes because of logistics and people are out of town and all that, but it's great to have people in here. There's a little more energy. It's fun. I have to turn on all the lights and hopefully it makes you guys nervous a little bit, but it's pretty fun to just get everything going and have this in-person situation. So Rusty, I gave you an assignment. You're an unpaid intern here, but I said, hey, I really needed some show ideas. Can you come up with something? And I thought this is a great one. So I'm going to kick it over to you.
Yeah. I mean, the basic idea is fire goes to the movies. So I think we kind of all brainstormed via email or via Google Doc about what movies we thought best represented the fire movement or had the most fire themes. And so I think the ones we're going to talk about are The Matrix, Office Space, Fight Club. Local Hero was my recommendation, which maybe people haven't heard about as much, but I'm pretty excited to talk about it. And then Doug had one TV show in the mix, Corporate, which I just watched for the first time since you recommended it. I watched some of the episodes and it's hilarious. So super excited to talk about that as well. And we tried to pull out the main fire-based themes from those. We might also talk about the fire blowback trend of recent years. I'm going to drop some more philosophy into Mile High Five. That's my, yeah. I feel like that's where I've been driving the show with our ethics episode. But I'm going to talk a little bit about Socrates' allegory of the cave, because it's basically the blueprint for three of the movies that we have here. I think we'll probably hit those movies individually and then start talking about them and talk about the fire themes.
Perfect. All right. The cool part is we're roughly the same age, but I think like these movies hit us about the same. They all came out around the same time, at least the Office Space, Fight Club, and Matrix were all around 99 or so. We're very impressionable young men at that time. So
it's fun. That's actually like in the movie review culture, they say 1999 is the best year ever for movies. And so the fact that we like coincidentally picked three of the four movies we picked were from 1999, I was like, oh, that's just more proof of this concept.
So, wow. I did not know that. Well, Pete, I'm going to kick it to you first. Maybe we could start with The Matrix. Did you see that in the movies?
Yeah, I saw it when it was in the theaters, brand new. And I went in as I guess I was probably around 25 at the time. And I had no idea what to expect. I just knew like, oh, Kung Fu movie, Keanu Reeves. So maybe it's like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I don't know. I just thought, and then it just blew my mind, partly because it was so big scale and so different. And like, just, I still think about that night of first seeing it, even though I've seen The Matrix like a dozen times since then.
So maybe you were already like on the path to like retiring early, but you retired at 30. So this was a few years ahead of it. Mm-hmm. When you watched it, were you immediately like, holy shit, this is changing the way I think? Or when you walked out of the movies, like, what were you thinking?
It didn't have the impression, like, it didn't have that type of impression on me. It was more like, I love the movie for what it was, and like the idea of stuff behind the scenes that you don't understand, and of course, excellent kung fu, and the lobby scene with all the breaking marble. Like, but then it was later, like, you know, then I moved to the US shortly after that, and like my engineering career took off more. And that's what allowed me to save really quickly for the 30 retirement. And then it's only at that point I started making these parallels of like, oh yeah, the unseen world of financial freedom versus people who think they just have to do what everybody else does. And then I realized, oh yeah, that is a lot like The Matrix. So the wisdom of the movie kind of hit me 5 years later as I was coming into retirement. And that was really because I noticed the coworkers, as I always say, when people ask me like, what was it like to retire early? It was like, the weirdest part is that my coworkers weren't doing the same thing because we were all making the same amount of money, living in the same area. So there was no like cost of living difference or salary difference. But for some reason I had enough to live off forever and they were still living paycheck to paycheck on those same giant, in my opinion, salaries.
I had a similar reaction because I mean, I was even younger. I was, I guess, 15 when it came out, but I just thought it was like so cool. Like The Matrix, I thought it was like such a cool movie. And I remember I went to see it in the theaters at least twice because I remember going to see it like at the discount theater again with my buddies. And we were all talking about it and just like so excited about it. And back then pantomiming the fights and stuff like that and trying to do like a cartwheel off the wall, like in the, in the lobby scene. So, but yeah, so I, needless to say, some of the bigger themes went over my head at that age. But yeah, I've come back to the movie several times since then. And I think, you know, the big one for me is just like, he chooses to be free. Like he chooses his freedom over the comfortable life inside the Matrix. He chooses to take the red pill and to go live the authentic life, even though it's going to be more of a, you know, it's going to be more of a struggle. And he's definitely going against the mainstream trend of just being a battery for the Matrix and living his simulated life. It's like he chooses to break free. And I feel like that's like kind of the main fire theme from the movie, or the main parallel, because it's like the fire people are the ones where it's like there's this huge system that's all designed to keep you trapped, whether it's the conspicuous consumption or keeping up with the Joneses. You know, the idea that like Neo breaks free from that, it's like he's kind of like a hero for the fire movement. I also think there's a
I wanted to interject a point.
Yeah,
though, like, you bet. There's a huge difference because we don't want to give the wrong impression to people. Because in The Matrix, you wake up from a relatively beautiful world with steak and skyscrapers, and then you're on this cold metal ship and like everything's kind of scary and there's these tentacle things trying to like laser into your ship. So it's different in the fire because here you retire and life is immediately better, right? Like you have this warm coffee and you're making pancakes while everyone else is stuck in the Chicago traffic jams trying to drive to the office. It's like, it's like The Matrix, but also the opposite of The Matrix in a way, because you're leaving to a much better place.
Right. Yeah. When you, if you were to take the red pill and he would go into the more beautiful world, that would be the one. But I think he's underscoring like, even if it's not, even if the world isn't better, it's like freedom is its own benefits. Even if it's the crappier world, you'd rather, you know, he'd rather be free than be a battery for the Matrix. Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good discussion there. I was going to say maybe other people, the people controlling us, in air quotes, everybody, that's in air quotes, but there's a narrative like, oh, if you don't work, you're going to be eating the rice and beans. And you're like, that is much worse, but like we're on the other side. And there's many ways to do it. This is a full spectrum of like how you want to retire and what you want your life to be. But like, there's definitely some narrative where it's like, well, I don't want to compromise. I want everything all the time. And you can retire early and do that if you want to, or you could do like a different flavor, like whatever you want in your life. So yeah, good distinction, because there's a lot of people telling stories, selling something.
Yeah. And that's been the big, maybe we'll cover that later in our edition here, but the blowback against fire always keeps bringing back to like, oh, it's big sacrifices that aren't worth making in order to retire early, which is just totally wrong.
Right.
And I keep having to defend it like decade after decade.
Right. Well, going back, one more point kind of in this frame of mind. So Pete, you were like, why aren't my peers saving in the same way, same salary, cost of living, all the things you mentioned? Was there a time when you were like, hey, what are you guys doing with your money? Like what's going on? Like you guys could just do this too. Did you try to convince people or anything back then?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. I mean, I didn't try to push it on them, but we would all get to talking between our work times and people were curious about our lifestyle differences. And it helped that we were all engineers, right? So that's kind of like a notoriously curious demographic. It's not like people who are known for trying to put up a show to look like something they aren't. So engineers generally want to learn anyway. But it was still interesting that how different it was even then. Like that's where I learned about the existence of pickup trucks with six wheels. And one of my coworkers really drove one of those things to work. And I'm like, what the hell? Like that was such a formative thing. Like I'm sitting there as a 25-year-old riding my bike, and then I see this thing coming in, this big diesel. I'm like, wow, is that guy picking up like 26 horses on the way home from work today? And then the next day that truck was back, I'm like, another 26 horses? And then I realize he's using that as if it's a car. And that, like, that type of thing just like still stuns me to this day, especially because you still see these clown trucks everywhere.
And that's why I got rid of my truck.
So that Pete wouldn't rip on you too much.
Well, no, he just only had four wheels.
Yeah, he comes out. Yeah, and only had four wheels. He'd come over on his fucking bike. Like he rode his bike today. It's cold outside. It's like in the 30s.
It's like 56 degrees, yeah. And sunny, and it's like beach town. We're in like Hana Longmont today.
Okay, yeah. Let's move on to, let's go a little bit lighter. We'll go to Office Space. So when I saw this movie in the theaters, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I quite got it, but very quickly I did, because I started like an internship. So this was just like sophomore year in college. And I was like, oh, this is exactly where my life is heading. So I was, very formative. And I was like, oh, crap. I did a little research and I did find out Mike Judge mentions that TPS stands for test program set. So it's an actual thing. And he was he worked in engineering before he got into the animation game.
That's the TPS reports in that like early scene where Peter has all of his multiple bosses come by and tell him about the cover sheet. Yeah.
And like everything in the movie was like, as my career went on for the about 10 years, it was just like, oh yeah, multiple bosses, kind of bullshit situations that you have to deal with over and over again. And I guess over time it gave me a bad attitude at work.
Isn't that like, it was similar at the law firm, but I would imagine it's the same at the consulting firm. It's like you could, because it's project based, you end up having so many bosses because every worse. Project totally. Has its own, has its own boss. Yeah.
And then you end up with funny enough, it's a matrix organization where you have different leads all over the place, some of which are like your competitive vendors, other consulting firms. So you're basically like taking orders or giving orders to other people who like want to see you fuck up. So it's like, oh, come on. This
what a great dynamic to just for life, to have those be the main people you're interacting with as people who are rooting against you. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's a little different, but being a litigator is the same thing, because it's, you have an opposing side whose only goal in life is to like take you down while you're on the opposite side of a case. And it's just that's one of the reasons why the lawyers end up being such miserable people, is because you're trained to be antagonistic to other people, and then you constantly have people antagonizing you on the other side. So
that would explain certain parts of my relationship history
with lawyers.
Meeting lawyers. High-powered female lawyers. Won't say any more on that.
We won't dig into that one. Well, you were a classic software developer, right? So this was like watching a documentary on your life, right?
Yeah. I mean, not really, though, because the company that I worked at was a lot better than the one in Office Space, in Cisco Systems. And I think it's still a pretty well-run company. But of course, the bigger a company gets, the more likely it is to get like that. So it's still there. But the interesting part is everybody who has a job in a larger company is probably experiencing this. And yet some of those same people are the ones fighting back against the FIRE movement, saying like, oh, the FIRE movement's dead. Why would you want to quit your job? And yet they go in and get hassled about their TPS report cover pages the next day.
Oh, man. So you worked at Cisco?
Yeah.
Is that right? Haven't talked about it because we don't talk about work, basically. why would we talk about
it? It was 20 years ago, literally, since I hung up that keyboard. Dang. So it is funny to remember that, but the company still exists and it's doing well again these days. So it's interesting to remind myself. And I think some of my colleagues still work there, which is also shocking.
That is shocking
to think about.
Yeah. Crazy thing. So I worked at Nortel Networks, which you probably know well. It's a Canadian company.
That was a big thing.
And then they got swallowed up by Cisco, I think, right? Like eventually?
No, I think it was like Alcatel and then Lucent or something. Okay. Or no, maybe not. Maybe not Nortel. There was my other company called NewBridge that got eaten by Alcatel Lucent.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. And then maybe the product I was working on, things got split up.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. It was like, it was a long time ago.
But yeah, Nortel was famous for being like a little bit more traditional than Cisco, and it wasn't as cutting edge because it was born out of like a telephone manufacturer or something originally.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I was gonna. Let's stop talking about old work. Like, why would we do that? But So the other part, obviously, Office Space is just fucking hilarious. It's so well written, and it still works. Like, I think you watched it recently for your homework, Rusty.
I watched it this past weekend, and I was still laughing out loud. Yeah, there's that part where, specifically where Peter comes back after the weekend where he's supposed to have not, or where he's supposed to come into work and he doesn't, and Michael Bolton, which is one of the best character names ever, comes up to him and is like, you know, you weren't at work. What did you do all weekend? He's like, Michael, I did nothing. I did absolutely nothing, and it was everything I thought it could be. So I find that interesting too. I think that's an interesting parallel for Fire, because I do think you have that initial phase where it's like you kind of want to just do nothing, especially for like a solid week. I was kind of just like, when I was done working, I was like, I mean, I want to go outside and walk and be somewhat physically active, but I don't want to like even touch a computer. I think that's like kind of the initial phase. But then you see with Peter, like even in the movie, even while he's doing nothing, it's like, what is he actually doing? He's like pursuing a romantic relationship, like an area of his life he's totally just neglected because, you know, he's had this job. And then he like goes out fishing and things like that. And then ultimately decides to like work construction. So it's like, I do think there's a component of doing nothing, and it's when people are like, oh, I couldn't retire because I couldn't just sit around and do nothing all day. I was like, who said anything about sitting around and doing nothing? You can do literally anything you want. I guess the only thing you can't do is like show up to this office and sit on a computer and do TPS reports. Like, but they probably let you do that even too, if you really, you know, if you really wanted to. And then the actual doing nothing is like, actually, you're not only doing something, you're doing like the most important things in life. You're connecting with your friends, you're being outside, and that those are where people end up. There's like some YouTube video with like, I don't know, like 10 million views about like, it's someone who's not in the Fire movement, but they were like, I tried Fire and it wasn't for me. And they just talk, they're like, I didn't work for a week and I just sat around and played video games. And I was like, I need to go back to working 60 hours a week. I'm just like, these people, especially in America, are just like so obese on productivity. It's like, and you like, and you explain to them like the general concept of a diet, and they're like, "Well, I wouldn't want to be anorexic." And it's like, "Well, no, like you weigh 350 pounds right now, and we're just saying like maybe don't eat a donut." And they're like, "Anorexia," and I'm like, "No, yeah, let's worry about that when we get there. But like first, maybe take a weekend and try to like go fishing or go, you know, go on a date."
Yeah. And the other thing that's so much overlooked in this, like, what would I do? Do nothing. Dialogue is most, like, the majority of people have children and become parents at some point in their life. Like, it's still a pretty high percentage. Both you and I are on that plan too. You've got young kids. And like, that's, each child is a full-time job for two people. That's the way I like to explain it. So it takes two retired adults to raise one toddler, and that's like, you're maxed out. You barely have time to be married in that situation. So if you add a job on top of that, then suddenly one person's working double time, the one parent. And if you have two jobs, that means everything just explodes like a nuclear explosion. You got to bring in nannies, or you're just so stressed out because you're driving all the time, like dropping off at childcare, got to be there by 3 o'clock. And oh no, we got a birthday party, like super terrible. So anyway, having children is a job, and it's a very noble and important job for continuing the species for those who choose to do it. There's no shame in quitting your job in order to do that job, and you'll be plenty busy. So like, definitely quit your corporate job before your children, if you have the option, and you'll thank me later.
Yeah. Well, I'll thank you right now. Yeah. No, yeah, it was like reading your blog, and we found Fire when we were 34, and it was kind of like, oh, well, Pete quit to raise his kids. And it's like, well, wouldn't that be such a better way to raise kids and to actually, you know, spend time with them? So yeah, my wife and I get to spend almost unlimited time. And, you know, my dad worked a lot when I was a kid, and my son's 5 now. And I'm like, I've probably spent more time with my son now than I've ever spent with my dad my entire life as like a 41-year-old. And then, going, building on that point too, like, I had a friend who we told him we retired, and he's like, I couldn't do that. I couldn't sit around and do nothing. And I was like, don't you have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old? Like the idea that you could sit around and do nothing with two toddlers in your house is, yeah. I was like, that's comical. I was like, we just had the one kid at the time. And I was like, it's full time for both of us. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like so. Even getting in a grocery run is like a awesome achievement, and you feel like, whew, good thing I didn't have a job or we would not be able to eat today.
Yeah.
Well, and I was going to say, as someone with no kids, we find ourselves like, how do people do anything ever? Because we have a full schedule, no kids. The thing is, like, we're never in a rush, and we have plenty of time to do the activities that we want to spend time on. And we still don't have enough time to do those activities to the capacity that we want to. So like, even now I'm like, man, I sure could use an extra few hours per day or something like that. But yeah. I mean, everything's good, but I don't understand how people do it with kids and work like a job, or maybe they travel for their job. So they're gone for whatever, 3-4 days a week or something like that. It seems crazy.
Yeah.
You have to neglect something. Yeah. You either like neglect your health, you neglect your friendships. Unfortunately, like, you know, some people end up neglecting their family. It's, yeah, but it's either way, it's a shitty, it's a shitty trade-off. Like, so.
Yeah.
There's a couple other things I want to bring up. One is around people that think they'll be bored, but then I realized the brain space that a job was taking up. Even I worked remotely, I had a lot of autonomy. It still took up a lot of my brain power, and removing that was dramatic. It made a huge, massive difference. And I don't think people, while they're working, even if they're like, I work remote, all the shit I just explained, they don't appreciate how much time and mental energy a job takes up, even if it's 20 hours a week or something like that. Pete, do you have any observations on that?
I mean, the biggest example for me is that I ended up writing a blog about early retirement, which I never would have considered starting if I still had the job. I mean, even if I was like, I might have written a money blog, for example, like saving for early retirement, but not actually being retired. But I wouldn't have even had the mental space to do that if I was still working. So this big bonus chapter of my life related to being a blogger was only made possible by freeing up the limited brain power that I got back from the job and the parenting thing too, and all the other hobbies that I've had, like learning to build houses and learning to play music and other things. It's been really, really nice. And that's what we kind of, why I advertise it for other people to try it too, because I want everybody else to have that same joy too.
And you didn't start the blog until 5 or 6 years after you retired, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Did you have a sense during those like first 5 years that you were like doing like fire was a thing? Like, just because I know that was like early days. Like, was there any like sense of like, I'm like connected to this bigger thing? Or were you
No, it was just me and my wife at the time being happy that we had the free time.
Yeah.
And we did explain it to our friends. Everybody knew that we were doing this, of course. And some other people were sort of at different layers of doing the same thing a little bit, but there were also, most of them were still working and quite buried in needing to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think any other observations on office space?
Oh man. Well, they have their own ideas of like financial independence, which I thought like how they're going to get there. Cause they have like the pet rock, like they're talking about the guy who invented the pet rock. Like that's a dream. And then that same guy, he gets in the car accident and gets a settlement. And he's just like, has like the biggest grin on his face. Like, I'm going to get such a huge settlement. And then he comes up with the jump to conclusions. So he's like really tripling down. He's got all these different paths for, independence. And then, the stealing the money from the employer is the big one too. And so I feel like this was like 1999 pre a lot of these like actual developed fire concepts being out there. And so now there's like a much more pro-social way to achieve these goals and a much more repeatable way, which is spend less than you make, invest the difference in index funds, try to have a high savings rate. So I feel like, maybe now the fire movement would kill a movie like Office Space from coming out. But I mean, Office Space still works so well. So maybe just have to have a different conversation. Or if there could be like an actual fire character in a movie, that would be so great. Like,
that's how we will know we've made it.
Yeah.
Maybe The Simpsons.
Yeah. Someone's actually quitting their job because they just saved up more money. Yeah. Yeah. If Pete was on an episode of The Simpsons, that'd be huge.
Oh man. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great? I could be like Scruffy in a flannel shirt riding a bike. I could just totally imagine the scene and I would show up like, telling people.
How crazy would that be? That'd be amazing. Yeah. Who do we know? Let's call in some favors here. And
just you don't call the Simpsons. The Simpsons calls you.
That's true. You said you know somebody.
Yeah. My law firm represented Matt Greinig or whatever his name is. So
Greinig. He says it rhymes with complaining.
Okay.
All right. And the last point on office space, I almost forgot. So construction and working outside, you kind of paralleled Peter overall, but can you just talk about why you like construction and working on projects like that?
I think it's just because it's like such a fundamental human thing, like to combine your brain with your body, like solving problems in the real world instead of just on paper or on a computer or something. It's like fundamentally more satisfying. I just always knew that it was once I started doing it. But as I get older and I think about it, I'm like, yeah, it's probably because we were made to do this. And so there's something deep in my evolutionary fibers that's saying, yes, human, you're doing the right thing by moving objects around and reshaping them into tools, and weapons, for hunting and shelter.
And that would, it is going, I mean, we got off on several tangents, but going back to the intellectual stimulation thing, I think varying up your activities is so much more intellectually stimulating, both components, manipulating physical objects instead of just always being at a computer. It sounds like all three of us were mostly at a computer for our careers. So to actually be doing things in the physical world, I think is so much more enriching. And then the intellectual stimulation thing, I'm like, I would so much rather be able to read whatever book sounds most interesting to me that day than to just be like doing for me, like for me doing legal research on the topic that someone else assigned to me, you know, and doing legal research over and over again, 300 days a year is just, it's an intellectually demanding job, but it's not actually intellectually stimulating because you're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Let's transition to corporate, a TV show, and we'll be a little bit more brief on this one. So this was like an updated version of Office Space, in my opinion. It's modern. I think the humor is a little bit darker and more bleak, although Office Space has its share of darkness, but corporate is pretty, it hits you in a certain way. So by Comedy Central, came out in 2018. There's three seasons, so it's a quick watch. I'm not going to try to like recreate episodes or try to tell you too many things because it's a tough thing to do. The show's very good. The main characters are, in quotes, junior executives in training for a multinational corporation. And it's just kind of ridiculous. Some of the great episodes are called like The PowerPoint of Death, The Pain of Being Alive, Casual Friday, which sounds fun, but it's not as fun as it sounds. And there is an episode where basically they just talk about the usage of exclamation points or the lack of using them in emails. So just, I remember just sending emails. It's like, oh, are people going to take this the wrong way? One exclamation point or two. And yeah, it went all the way up to like the top, the actual senior executives, not just the junior executives in training. So great show, highly recommend, especially if you enjoyed Office Space. So Rusty, you mentioned you watched a couple episodes. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I pulled a couple quotes that I thought were kind of funny. Okay. So, cause I watched the first season after you had suggested it for this, and it's like hilarious. I mean, it's like you would think that like nothing could go harder against the office environment than Office Space, and corporate goes so hard. They're like, not only is this bad, but like if you stay in this environment, you will basically like want to kill. You will either kill yourself or want to kill yourself. But it's funny. It's like, you know, one of them, they go to like this weekend retreat, corporate retreat. And the quote at the beginning is, this weekend is about one thing, forming superficial relationships with people you can exploit in the future. It's called networking. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much the most accurate description of networking event that I've heard. And then the other one was there's this one episode where they're just basically trapped in a meeting. They're not even allowed to participate in the meeting. They're just like, because they're in training, they're like the executives in training. They just basically sit against the back wall. Like that's their dynamic. And so they're trapped in this meeting all day and they don't even like know what the meeting is supposed to be about, but it's supposedly super important. One of the characters goes, I feel like I'm wasting my life at meetings like this. And the other character goes, that's absolutely what's happening. If it makes you feel any better, there's no way to not waste your life. The best you can do is find something you love and work so hard and so long at it that it becomes something that you mostly complain about. And I was like, oh yeah, I was like, that's the corporate model that's the best case scenario for this corporate life.
Yeah. Perfect. And thank you you did really good on your assignment.
Rusty, oh yeah. He's like even pulled quotes. Yeah. For discussion.
That's the lawyer in him still.
Yeah.
He's great. Great to have on the team. Yeah. So Pete, did you get a chance to, it's okay if you didn't watch any of the episodes, but.
I'm totally excited to do so.
Okay.
I had it on my to-do list for this morning, but then laundry came up. So, and it was a sunny day. So I had to do sunny laundry.
Very good. Okay.
One more. The casual Friday one that you mentioned is like hilarious because the corporate lawyer comes in shirtless and he's like explaining why he felt like that was within the parameters of what was sold for casual Friday. But I just remember the casual Friday at the law firm was like basically you were allowed to wear jeans. You had to wear like the same top, but then you could wear jeans on the bottom. And to do that, you had to give like a $20 donation to charity. So it was like they were making you pay to wear jeans. And I'm just like, at the time, I was like, oh, this is nice. You know, they're raising money for charity. And I want to wear jeans. But it's so much better as not having to fucking pay anyone to wear jeans. Like, I will donate money to charity gladly. And I will wear jeans gladly. But they are two separate events in my life. Like, they do not, you do not have to pay for the right to wear jeans.
So. Plus, jeans are my dress-up pants now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Great show. People should check it out. Let's move to Fight Club now. So one of my favorite movies, great book as well. Of course, great to see Brad Pitt with the shirt off, classic scene. But I think this one really hit me with like the anti-consumerism kind of ideas and just like external validation. I think all three of us here are a little bit in air quotes, like more rebels, even though we worked corporate jobs at some portion, but we were like, I don't know if this really fits and just kind of made me anxious about the whole thing. So was this a big influence in your life, Pete?
No, Fight Club just went over my head. Like I thought it was a cool, interesting movie. And I liked the twist at the end where it's really the same guy, but.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Whoa, 25 year old movie.
But, it's still like I never quite drew the analogy to fire or independence of any sort until other people mentioned it to me. Mm. And I'm like, oh yeah. And I see the anti-consumerism stuff and the talk about buying stuff to impress people you don't know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as fiery to me as other things.
Yeah. And I think maybe it's just like that little piece is the part that I remembered. Like a lot of books and TV shows or whatever, it's just like I take the little piece and then I ignore all the other irrelevant stuff with the craziness and whatever.
You're not blowing up buildings or anything, Doug.
I didn't take the terrorism portion of it. Yeah, yeah. Very good. Okay, what about you, Rusty?
Same thought. I think it's the anti-consumerism is the main component of that. Yeah, I'd say like the Office Space is like the Office Space and corporate are like the anti-corporate message. That's like the key piece. If you combine all these movies we talked about so far, I think they would hit a lot of that would create the perfect whatever fire movie.
What's most notable though is that there aren't very many of these movies that are known as examples of anti-consumption. I feel like
it's the opposite.
Yeah. There should be more of them maybe. And maybe that's, it makes sense that the culture that makes these things, it's all about advertising, might not want to like make movies against their own revenue stream. Right. But even so, it seems like there's still room for some more.
Anything else like with Fight Club?
There's the interaction where the Edward Norton and Brad Pitt characters meet, which as we've already said are the same person, but the Ed Norton character asks the Brad Pitt character like, what do you do for a living? So, and that's like, you know, such a classic like awkward conversation, especially when you're retired. But Brad Pitt goes, you know, why? So you can pretend that you're interested. And I was like, oh, that maybe that's like what we should adopt as fire people. With all the, with these movies too, with Office Space, Fight Club, and The Matrix, those are all the ones that like are, they have the blueprint from the allegory of the cave. The allegory of the cave is like from Socrates. It's like, it's kind of like a thought experiment. And it's like, imagine you've lived your whole life inside a cave. And not only are you in the cave, but you're like strapped to a chair and you can only face forward. So you can't even like look around to see that you're in a cave, and your only version of reality is, since it's Socrates, it's like shadows on a wall. But it, the other analogy could be like you're looking at a movie screen, and then imagine one day that you actually break free from the chains and you're able to look around and see that you're actually in a cave. And then takes it a next step further. And it's like, imagine you could even, there was a ladder and you climbed up it and you got out of the cave and you could actually see the world as it was in itself. And you'd be like, this is mind blowing. This is so great. And then you kind of come back down to the cave and you try to convince others and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? But he's like, but it's still worth coming back into the cave because you'll be able to get a few other people. And you see in Fight Club, they're trying to recruit people over to their way of life. You know, obviously it's terrorism and has some downsides, but it's still, you know, they're still trying to fight for a cause. And then Office Space, you know, he gets Samir and Michael Bolton to kind of come over to his side. And, you know, The Matrix is obviously like the most direct example where there's the rebellion and they're climbing out of their little cocoons to come do it. But I feel like that's a pretty good analogy sometimes with like fire, where it's like, we've seen a better path. Like we have this different thing to come out there, but there is something about human nature where I feel like it's hard to convince people. But, and when people say they love their jobs too, I'm like, I'm sure you do. Like I thought my job was cool and important too, but I tried your thing and I tried this other thing and this other thing is better. So, and you haven't tried this other thing yet. So maybe just be a little bit open-minded to like giving it a try or incorporating some of the aspects of it into your life. So,
yeah, we're going to have to do a whole separate episode on the anti-fire thing, I think, like yeah. Featuring like where we bring up the picture of like each little YouTube video.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many things that say, is fire dead? And then like do a quick analysis of what that episode is and what their points are. And so that way it's like breaking it down yeah. one by one.
Okay. But at least these movies like are on our side. Like, yeah. To Pete's point, they might not be all of them, but it's like
yeah.
these flip the script a little bit. Cause it's like, how could you have meaning and purpose if you're not working? And it's like, these movies are like, how could you have meaning and purpose if you are working? You're like,
yeah. So, you know what? Right. I'll actually submit one more contemporary example.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of silly, which is Reacher. So Reacher, which is my favorite show in the last many years.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's hilarious. And it's definitely a cartoon in a way. It's like a real life live action cartoon. But the main character Reacher is this like personification of like the toughest, most invincible, most heroic individual you can possibly have. Like he's just absolutely invincible, which is kind of hilarious. But part of his character is that he's so minimalist. Like the only thing he owns is a toothbrush. And there's all these scenes like he's like, well, we'll be here for a few days. I guess I'll settle in. And he puts his toothbrush on the countertop. Like he doesn't own a phone, doesn't have like wallet or anything like that. And so it's kind of nice because he's a reaction to like the whole bullshit, like TikTok, everybody online culture and like, oh, how many likes did I get and everything. And instead he's just like the very simplest, toughest guy. And I feel like they're playing that up deliberately in the show to be like the opposite of the online world we have now. And also the opposite of the work world, right? Because he just has like a military pension. That's his only income. He just like, that's all it is. He doesn't seek money. He's like, that's enough. I just go to the thrift store and buy like 5 new shirts that are extra, extra large every time I get bullet holes in my previous ones.
Yeah, so good. And that's exactly right. He just like donates or throws away the clothes when he's done wearing it. And then people are like, what, you don't wash them? And he says, oh, well, I'd need to have a house and I need to have other stuff. And that all costs money. So this is actually better to just like buy clothes. And then, although I would sweat through them immediately. So I'm like, I don't know. He seems like he does fine with it though.
Well, yeah. Sometimes he has to like chase somebody through like, or turbulent ocean and like that washes his shirt. So then you got another day use out of that one.
I'm glad to hear that, because I had like the Jack Reacher books, and then the first film adaptation was with Tom Cruise, and they missed that whole aspect of it. And I was like, this isn't even the same character. And so I'll have to check out the show, because that's what I liked about it. Oh, you're so lucky
if you've never seen Reacher before. Oh, only to go back and have the pleasure of watching it
for the first time.
Yeah. I rewatch the old seasons because, you know, they come out too slowly for me, and it's like referring to Bible passages for me. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. And I'm like quoting the lines and everything.
I didn't know that. That's great. Yeah. I read all the book series.
Oh, wow.
And I know Jordan Doc G, he's a big fan too, and read all the books. But yeah, we went back, and it's only been out maybe 2 or 3 years on Amazon. So you could definitely get those Reacher episodes. Yeah. You can have a good weekend, man. It's going to be really cool.
No, well, my wife and son were gone last weekend, so that's how I was able to catch up on these. Yeah,
don't binge Reacher. Just watch maximum of one episode per night.
Oh, yeah.
And then sleep on it and absorb your learnings.
You're right. Yeah. You're right.
That's another thing. I mean, like, I hadn't turned on my TV in, like, I mean, probably at least 2 months. So it was, anyways, it's a lot more fun to watch TV when you're doing it very deliberately and intentionally versus... Like when I was working, we were actually watching more TV, but it was like, we were so stressed by the day that we'd like come home and watch TV a lot. I don't know if you guys have found like similar things, but no.
I never watched TV.
You didn't watch it to start with.
I only got into it for Reacher, and that was during a strange situation when I was living in an apartment a couple of years ago. I had less to do.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Interesting. Well, and we watch, if I'm by myself, I typically won't turn on the TV. Like if Elizabeth is out of town, I do watch YouTube. So it's like a bit similar, but it's like on demand. I choose what I'm watching. So a little bit different. That said, we actually do watch usually one show or so per night. And we'll like while we're eating dinner, and it'll be like right now we're rewatching like 30 Rock. So typically sitcoms, I like silly shows. So like those are funny. They're pretty quick. And it's a good pastime for us. Yeah. We enjoy that. It's
so different. Like when we go to people's houses and they'll just have the TV on like in the background all the time. I'm like, do you not realize how disruptive this is? Like, I just feel like so much anxiety by that. So
especially with the sound, like when people leave the sound on and oh man.
Yeah. The one guilty pleasure I do have. So in a hotel, so I'm at a conference or something like that. And if I'm by myself, I'll turn the TV on to the Food Network typically. And then it'll just be like Guy Fieri, like 24/7, right? Just over and over again. But I like him, and usually it's something interesting. I like cooking and all that stuff. So it makes sense. Or occasionally Hallmark Channel, depending on the time of year, and then it'll just play. But I don't want to get sucked into one of those Hallmark movies, which are just fabulous, of course.
Yeah. Can't break free. Way to bring it full circle to the Hallmark movies.
Yeah.
Yep. And I will give a quick mention. So we recorded just a short 5 minutes on Hallmark movies. I made a pitch that Hallmark movies are great and they are a metaphor for the Fi lifestyle. And to Pete's dismay, he came around and said, yeah, you know what? I think you're right. So we'll put that on Buy Me a Coffee. It'll just be like a special little thing. I'll put a link if you want to check out to see how to support the show. Okay. So we wrapped a lot of stuff up. Any other last minute movies you want to put in?
Rusty? Well, my local hero one that I plugged at the beginning. I realize no one has seen this, but
I want to see it after hearing your description.
First of all these movies we picked are in the top 1,000 on They Shoot Pictures, Don't They? Which is like a Metacritic. And Local Hero is on there as well. And it's a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's on like a lot of lists of like the best cult movies of all time. So this isn't like a totally off, just like wild pick. The main character is an oil executive in Houston. And my wife and I used to live in Houston. So it's like the perfect counterpoint example for like, if you want like a city that's just devoted to like cars and energy, probably like Houston, LA are probably the two like biggest examples you could come up with. But so he's a young oil exec. He starts out, he's in Houston. Like he's only talking to people on the phone or via fax machine. It's from the 80s. So it's like cutting edge technology at the time. And he even says like he prefers it to do all of his communications via fax, which is like like just such a weird thing that like that would have been a moment in time when people were just faxing each other for communication. And you know, he's like driving to work in Houston, and you get the weather report, and it's like one thing about this movie, it's like very subtle. Like you almost have to watch it a couple times to see where it's going, and then to get all the references. But like as he's driving to work, they have the weather report in Houston, and it includes the lead levels in the air. And it's, so it's just like, on what planet does lead in the air count as weather? You know, like Houston in the 80s would be the answer. So he gets this assignment where he's supposed to go to this small fishing village in Scotland and essentially buy the village so that they can build an oil refinery there. And he gets there, and it's like the most beautiful, idyllic place that you could imagine. All the buildings are white. There's these big, deep, sandy beaches. There's all these like little tide pools and creatures in the tide pools. And then the community like is like a super vibrant community where they all know each other, and they have such a different approach to work than he has. It's all about the like working to live instead of living to work. And his like main counterpoint is the accountant in town, and he's also the cab driver, and he runs the inn, and he kind of, you know, does each job as it's needed. You know, when it's time to have an accounting meeting, he's having an accounting meeting. When someone needs a ride, he's driving the taxi. And it's like such a different approach to work than to just be doing that all the time. And so it's like this town like kind of like slowly gets its hooks in this guy. Like one of the first things he does, and it's a lot of it is like connecting with nature, but one of the first things he does is like accidentally hits a rabbit with his car on his way in, and he takes the rabbit in. And not to ruin one of the best jokes in the movie, but then later the inn owner sees that there's a rabbit in his hotel, and so he kills it and cooks it and serves it to him for dinner. But even the act of eating like the rabbit that he knew is like, you can tell it's a way for him to reconnect with nature, because he's actually like, it's not just meat to him. It didn't just come in like a plastic wrap thing. It was an actual animal. And so, yeah, he starts looking at the nighttime sky. There's like the aurora borealis. He sees a meteor shower. He goes hunting around the tide pools. Some of the early scenes are like, they're not over the top comical, but it's like he's in his business suit and he's like walking on the sandy beach, and you're just like, these clothes are ridiculous, like for anything, but especially for that specific activity. You can kind of sort of guess where the movie's going, but I won't like totally spoil the end. Yeah, he comes to question whether or not he's on the right side of the transaction. And there's this one really kind of like scene that kind of really sums up a lot of the fire themes, where he's talking to the inn operator / accountant / taxi driver. And he's like, here's my life in Houston. I propose a trade straight up. I have a Porsche. It's all paid off. I have a condo. I have this job. I make $80,000 a year. I have $50,000 in mixed securities. And he's like, you can have it all. And I'll take your life here. Like we'll do a straight up trade. So fire was more explicitly the theme, he'd be like, you know what, I'm going to cash in all that stuff, and I'm going to live off 4% of the the assets and move to this village in Scotland. So it kind of encapsulates a lot of those themes. But yeah, thanks for listening to me, guys, on my somewhat rambling rant. But yeah, it's a great movie. And it's free on Canopy. People haven't heard of Canopy, it's a lot of libraries have it. So it's like included in your Boulder County Library membership. Oh. And it has like awesome movies. So
I didn't know that.
Watch it for free.
How'd this end up on your radar?
So we went to this town in Scotland. It was like the same trip when the article about Carl was in the New York Times, and we were in this town, and they were like, oh, this movie Local Hero was filmed here. And I hadn't seen it before, but you know, you just Google and it's like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and you're like, oh. And then it's like, you're like, it would be cool to see a movie that was filmed here because this is such a beautiful place. So it's like, as I was discovering Fire, and I had such a good time on that trip. And then as I've talked about in previous episodes, like my work was just like retaliated against me for not being in the office. Yeah. And so it's like that movie had an extra special place in my heart because it was
interesting.
Yeah.
And then to remind me and the listeners, so the article with Carl came out, and then you read it.
I read it while I was in Scotland.
And that's then, like, how you kind of got, and it led to sitting here right now.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. Right, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Man. That's crazy. We
read like Carl's blog, then read Pete's blog. And now, yeah, to bring it full circle, I'm talking about Scotland on a podcast with Pete. So, yeah. It's
like, damn. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Me too.
Canopy is a good tip. Very cool. All right. And like we said, I think, Pete, you mentioned we should probably hold the backlash against Fire for a whole other episode. But if we could give a little teaser, can you, I guess, like describe the thesis of that idea, and then we'll do it sometime in the future.
Yeah. Well, the fun part is I didn't even know this was happening, but what happened is I initially saw, because I follow Mindy and Scott with the Bigger Pockets podcast, I saw they did an episode that was kind of joking. It's like, is the Fire movement dead? And then the spoiler is like, no, of course it's not. it's only smart principles. How could that ever die? But they were just, but it turns out they were making fun of this trend on YouTube and other things, like people with blogs and even Substacks and everything, where they do proclaim the Fire movement is dead. And there's even a Dave Ramsey thing. He's like, oh, Fire movement's dead, burned down. And then he has this.
That's a good impression.
Yeah. And if you ever look, and the reason I saw that is because I was looking to find Scott and Mindy's episode, and then it filled my whole screen with like these big sensationalistic, is Fire dead? And there's one with Dave Ramsey. So I had to click on that. And like, he didn't even make a point as to why it was dead. He just wanted to make a little joke to move on and sell some more security systems and insurance and stuff like that. Because like, that show is so bad. But anyway, so I clicked on a few of them and watched them. And like, they all have a different reason, but they're all bullshit. Like, it's always either a profound misunderstanding of what financial independence really is, or just clickbait, and they actually like Fire. And they're just like, I wanted to make you watch my video. So it would be fun to dispel all of these things. And like, of course, Ramit Sethi with I Will Teach You to Be Rich, he likes to attack the Fire movement too. So he made such a video as well. And I clicked on that, and it was actually well done, because it's just like, he said a bunch of good stuff about the Fire movement. And he's also not anti-Fire. And he's like, except when you don't let yourself have fun and you're just obsessed with saving even when you have millions of dollars. Yep. Which of course, like when I started writing about this, it was not about any of that. It was about like, just be slightly less ridiculous and start having fun now instead of waiting till you're 65 to have fun. So I feel like it would be really great to do a case by case thing, and also like basically throw back a little bit of the, fire back in this little pretend media war, because people are getting away with it too much and they're getting clicks and views for just putting out crap. It's not really good information. It's misinformation.
I feel like the Dave Ramsey, I feel like part of the reason why like people say Fire is dead is because these like prominent Fire figures aren't like putting out content anymore. But I'm like, no, that's actually like, that's another underscoring sign. The point of Fire is like, they're walking away from it. They're not just like, it's not like Dave Ramsey and he's going to have a never ending stream of crap to sell to people forever. I'm like,
yeah,
Dave Ramsey's still alive because he's being a freaking jerk and like getting people into like asset under management advisors who kick back money to Dave Ramsey. Like,
It's a little bit like the Fire people were all having this nice beach party, and then we're like, oh, I'm tired, let's go home and take a little break. And then all these other anti-Fire people are like, came over to our and picked up our half empty drinks and like, look, the party's over. This proves this doesn't work. Everybody, look at this. And we're like, relax, guys. We're just being retired here.
Yeah. Very good. So yeah, this a little sneak peek. And as a YouTube creator, which I try to just like not look at the metrics, because you may end up making videos where like it gets a lot of views, but it's kind of like maybe you don't even disagree with them, but you're making the video because it's a negative spin and that gets more clicks. Like if you just look at the feed and you let yourself go down that algorithmic route, you will find like what's wrong with fill in the blank. There's all these negative framed videos, and sometimes they're clickbait and sometimes they're just total bullshit, but it's a weird area. And that's, again, one reason why I don't look at the metrics too much, because I don't want to like chase those. It puts you in a bad spot, basically. So, all right, that'll be very fun. We'll have to do some homework for that. Rusty, thanks a lot for joining me. Is there a place where people could find you at all?
I have an email that I set up specifically since I started doing the show, but it's rustyfromco@gmail.com.
All right, and we'll link it up so people can get to it. And cool. Pete, what about you?
I'm still Mr. Money Mustache.
Okay, you have a blog.
You do?
I heard. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll link up to that.
Works.
And thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. You were just saying that you retired at 36, Rusty, is that right?
Yeah.
And then how old were you, Pete?
30.
And then I didn't even hear about any of this shit until I was like 35. So like so far behind, but you were saying it's super interesting to have like real people that actually retired and like you're drawing down. And I think you both do the, you borrow against your equity. So the buy, borrow, die strategy, which is kind of cool, that has been coming up a lot. But yeah, I think here in Longmont, we see tons of people that are literally retired, and I think a lot of people stop blogging or sharing their story, so we don't hear about them as much.
Yeah, right. So the blog readers and the people who contact us as the content creators, we're often hearing from people who are still saving aggressively, and then they just drop out and relax. And that's probably why I'm also writing less too, is I'm just more focused on being retired.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then Rusty, did you run across folks that were like retired in your normal life, like before you moved to, say, Colorado?
I did, especially when we first were like getting into FIRE, we were kind of like trying to talk to people about it more. We kind of laid off that a little bit, but one good thing that came out of it was that there were like a couple of our friends who were like, oh yeah, I'm also really interested in that topic. And one of them actually, you know, retired. We brought it up at a meeting and she's like, wait, do you read like Mr. Money Mustache blog and you're into the whole FIRE thing? And we were like, yeah, we're like planning to retire and imminently. And she's like, me too. And so that those moments are cool. And then that balances out all the awkward conversations where it's like, oh, I could never do that because I'm too lazy. And it's like, really, it's lazy to save your money aggressively and like invest at a much higher rate than the average person? Because I always felt like that was the more ambitious path than just never questioning life.
And then the other thing, which we could talk about this topic all day, which we just naturally were talking about it, but like people say, what will you do all day? It seems like I would be so bored, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, you have no idea. What do you think of people? They're like, oh, I'll just be bored. I don't know what you're doing.
I mean, it's totally possible because if you have a job that you've worked too long, it's probably replaced all of your other ideas for what to do with your time. But that's why early retirement, I think, is actually a really good idea, like doing it in your 30s or 40s, because you might still have some brain cells left that aren't totally optimized to just be a worker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.